Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And into another Wednesday night in 2022. And actually, today is Sean Casey's birthday, my good friend Sean Casey. And so we give a happy birthday to Sean. I'm sure he's not listening, but we said happy birthday to him on the air. Anyway, I'm here with my associate and the president of Financial Consulate, Michael P. McCarthy.
Good to be back.
Yeah, you've been not feeling well for a few weeks, and nothing to do with COVID, just not feeling well. You took, what, 22 tests, I think?
I took three.
Three COVID tests. Negative.
But apparently COVID did not remove other forms of illness from the world. So I got one of the worst ones, and I was down for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I remember I was, Anyway, we're here on an open show, Michael, and means that our listeners get to be the guest. Our listeners get to direct the conversation. They get to determine what we're going to talk about tonight. And if you want to call in and direct that conversation, it's 410-922-6680. That's 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and direct the conversation, because we're on an open show tonight. Any topic dealing with your personal finance, with your money, we're here to answer for you. Did you have something you were ready to talk about, Mikey?
Well, I have a couple things. I mean, the first thing, just to maybe inspire folks to get on the phone, is there's no one calling yet. And, it's the beginning of tax season. Doesn't anybody have tax questions? Those are my favorites. I really love tax questions. But I will say that we announce this every year, that the state has opened the state contribution program for the Maryland 529 account. So if you have, if you're a Maryland resident and your income individually is under $112,500 or $175,000 for a married couple, and you put in a contribution of $25, $100, or $250, you may get a I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but essentially you can get anywhere from $250 to $500, put into that account as well. If this doesn't apply to you, maybe it applies to somebody you know. The 529 is a great tool for saving for education.
Yeah, there's two ways you benefit on a 529. One is that they'll give you a matching contribution into your 529. Or if you, no matter what your income is, they'll give you a $2,500 per person, per child deduction on your tax return. And so a married couple can get it literally $5,000 a year. So I would agree with you, Mike. It's a great thing to consider.
And now it can be used for private schools. Was it elementary through high school, right?
Elementary through high school, but you can only take $10,000 a year out of the plan. And we use this plan quite frequently and take great advantage of all the opportunities they have to offer. It's a great planning strategy.
Yeah, $10,000. And for this area's private schools, that's about half.
I don't even know if it's half, Mike. There's a couple of them that are $25,000,
$35,000. I have kids. I've done the research. Yeah. Well, yeah, some of them are, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're here on an open show. If you'd like to call and direct the conversation, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. Another stupid idea from the Maryland legislature, Mikey, is coming out that any business that doesn't have a retirement plan has to have a retirement plan. And if they don't, then they're going to give them a state retirement plan. I don't know where these guys come up with these crazy ideas. I think they think they're helping people, but they're probably hurting more than they help.
Yeah, and I think there is a number of employees, right? I mean, we just got this. I just saw it the other day. We haven't, may not have all the details on that yet.
Yeah, I'm sure that there is a limit, you know, like they're not going to say if you're a two-person company, you got to put in a, I hope they don't, but they could, who knows? I haven't seen the fullness of this stupid law, but it's anytime government mandates things, it's an issue in my mind. I just don't like government mandates. You know, I think they think they're doing good, but they do more harm than they ever do good. But let them believe in their mind what they want to believe. Anyway, you're here on an open show, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and direct the conversation. Or else I'm going to just have to keep chattering with Mikey here. And he doesn't mind that always until I start rambling on about politicians. Then he gets a little concerned.
I've had them install a drop button for your microphone. I've got it right here.
He gets the itch, the eye twitch when I start rambling about politicians. So anyway, we're here on an open show. Another topic that we were going to that I was wanted to talk about, Mike, is I get a lot of people saying to me, you know, inflation's coming. I'm going to buy Bitcoin to protect myself from inflation. I'm going to buy gold to protect myself from inflation. But the number one most surprising thing you can do if you believe inflation is on the horizon is something that nobody would even think about. But here it is. A 30-year fixed rate mortgage on something like your house at a very low interest rate is probably the greatest asset you can have if you wanted to protect against inflation. Because, you know, if you borrow a lot of money against a house at a very low interest rate, which I did down here, Mike, I could have bought this house and paid cash for it. But instead, I took a $500,000 loan on it at 2.5% for 30 years fixed. Because I looked at the numbers and I said, this is ridiculous. They want to lend me this much money at 2.5%? For 30 years fixed, I said, you know, fine. And with my tax deduction for that, I mean, the net cost of that money is about 1.75% at best. So, you know, a 30, you know, I'll give you another example. My father back in 1976 bought a house in Harleysville, Pennsylvania, and took out a $100,000 mortgage on that house. And they lent it to him at about 4.5% or 5%. And, you know, lo and behold, 5 years later, inflation's roaring and money market funds are yielding 15%. And his bank is literally writing him letters saying they'll give him a 10% discount to pay down any amount that he pays down in his mortgage. They'll give him a 10% discount to do it. So, you know, actually, funny thing is that in times of inflation, a fixed rate mortgage over a long period of time is one of the greatest assets you can have, even though it's a liability. Anyway, Mike, we're at a pause point, right?
Yeah, we are. We are. We will be back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth. 410-922-6680. Call in. Your question is the next one we're going to answer.
There's nobody on the line right now.
No one on the line.
922-6680. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
I like it.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and neither Mike or I know what that band is, and we really don't really care either. Anyway, so we're here.
I liked it.
And we're on an open show. We do have a few callers online, but if you'd like to get on, still a couple of lines open, 410-922-6680. Let's go to Richard and see what his question is there, Michael.
All right, Richard in Towson, you want to talk about Medicare?
Yeah, hi, Drew. Enjoy your show very much. This is a question concerning the income threshold for Medicare Part B premiums.
Okay.
My wife, unfortunately, passed away in 2021. I'm filing married jointly for 2021. My question is, on the 2023 Medicare premium, I know it's based on the 2021 tax return as far as income is concerned. My question is, what is the filing status based on?
Okay, so here's how it works, okay? So the reason they use 2 years before, so in other words, 2022 is looking at the 2020 tax return. But the law, Richard, says, what is your income in 2022? That's what determines the IRMA surcharge. But Medicare said, wait a minute, we won't know your income for 2022 until after the year's over, okay?
Correct.
So what we're going to do is we're going to look at your 2020 tax return and assume that your income's the same, but if for some reason something changes for you, then we're going to allow you to submit an SSA 44 and tell them that you've had a life-changing event, death, disability, loss of a job, retirement, partial loss of a job, income-producing property destroyed, any one of those, and you can say, my income in 2022 is not going to be what you're looking at in 2020, so you can't charge me in 2022 what you want to charge me. So that's the game they play, okay? So okay. Your 2021 tax return, which you're going to file this year, is going to determine your 2023 payment, and they're going to look at you as a joint income household again, okay? And yep. So that's how they'll assess your premium in 2023, okay? Okay. But then in 2024, they're going to pick up on the fact that you're single, and then they're going to start using that as your factor.
Right. So for 2023, they won't be using my marital status being widowed.
And they won't likely look at you as single, but here's what you do is you wait until late 2022 when they send you your statement that says, here's your Social Security and we're going to charge you for Medicare. Okay.
Right.
And you look at what that says and then you assess whether they're right or wrong for what they expect for 2023. And if you think they're wrong, we file the SSA 44. We say that we've had a death of a spouse. We say that in 2023, our income's not going to be nearly what you're saying it is. And therefore,
well, my income will probably not be that much less different from 2021.
Yeah, but you know, at this point in time, I'm assuming that they're going to look at you as joint because that's what they're going to look at on your 2021 tax return.
Right. So I don't need to tell them I'm no longer joint.
They're going to pick that up on your 2022 tax return.
Right, correct. But for 2021...
Now, Medicare, Social Security, and Medicare are the same thing. So Social Security will know that your spouse has passed away, right?
Right.
But I don't think they're that sharp. At this point in time, we've not seen it. Okay. But you know, let's assess it when you get your statement next year. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
They should do it on the assumption that I'm married filing jointly, which makes a big difference because the threshold's 91,000 for single and about 170,000 for married.
It's actually more like 184,000 for married.
My income is probably about 110,000.
Yeah. In the future, you're going to definitely be going up, my friend. All right?
Aware
Good
that,
question, yeah. Richard.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we've got callers on the line, so we'll rip right over to Dave in Parkville. Dave, you had a 529 question.
Hi, guys. I have a two-part question. One leads into the other. What are your thoughts about investing grandchildren's savings in the 529 plan and or custodial accounts? Current administration is talking about waiving the cost for some college expenses, and what does that do for the 529 savings, and not just for one, but up to 18 years plus?
Yeah, that's the age-old question. I've been expecting college costs to get demolished in the future, and it's slowly starting to happen, but certainly not in any spectacular fashion in any way, shape, or form. And I've always been tentative of putting too much money into a 529 plan. You got something you're adding there, Mike?
Yeah, well, I was going to bring up what do they call it, Dynasty 529? That's the other side of that argument.
You mean just trying to keep the money in there forever and just keep rolling it over to family member to family member and actually treat it like a fixed annuity almost?
Yeah, so some families that have, that kind of capital, they'll super fund the 529.
I've looked at that scenario, and I think that, I've always thought that, they're grasping at straws to believe that that's a good idea. But I'm not saying it can't.
But what if every generation goes to private elementary and high school?
Yeah, well, okay, so there's
my argument.
There's a different story. Do you have that type of scenario, my friend?
Dave?
Well, I can, but you're not making me feel real good about the 529 plan right now.
Well, I'm like this. I always like putting about $2,500 a year and getting my tax deduction for it. I have no problem with that because I'm fairly confident you're going to spend that on the education, either elementary school or college or something of that sort. So, and if I'm married, putting $5,000 a year in for my children or grandchildren. The custodial accounts, if you're going to do a custodial account, the way you do it is you invest in index funds, okay? And the reason you invest in index funds is that there will be very little tax consequences in them. So you buy the index fund and you just hold it for the children until you need the money. And you see, because in a custodial fund, once you go over, I think it's $1,100, the taxable income over $1,100 starts getting taxed to the parents, not to the child anymore.
I thought that was $1,900.
Okay, yeah, so it's in that ballpark. It's like the first 1,000 is the child's exemption, and then the next 100
we're going to have to put you on hold. I got to go right to the news.
And we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And there's Elton John playing the piano, as always.
Yeah, because look on Chris's face is that's a negatory.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. I forgot more about music.
The track title and the artist on his computer screen. So
I forgot more about music than Chris Klaproth knows. Okay. So anyway, there you go. Anyway, we're on an open show. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. Why don't you be on the show? And we're on an open show. We're talking about your topics. Is Dave still there, Mike?
Dave, did you hold on? Oh, so I got to explain myself. So Chris told me that the local news guy was out, and he had to join at exactly 6:29. And I have a video call going with Andrew, and I'm shaking my hands and pointing at the clock, but he wasn't paying attention, so I had to interject.
I was paying attention to you, Mike. But
you're paying attention to Dave.
You're normally erratic like that, so anyway.
My apologies, Dave.
And that's fine. I'm here.
So Dave, the first 1,000 or so is the exemption for the child. The next 900 or so is the tax bracket of the child. Everything over that 1,900 or so is taxable to the parents. And so if I'm accumulating money in a custodial account for children, I normally will use a couple index funds, like a U.S. large cap and an international developed index fund, and just hold the two of them until they're much older. And because of that, because of the way index funds operate, the only thing I'm going to ever have coming off of those as income is maybe a few percent of dividends every year. Because okay. ETF index funds do not generate capital gain distributions. And that's important that you buy an ETF index fund in a custodial account for children so you minimize any income that could possibly come in off of those accounts.
All okay? right. That's very helpful. Yeah.
But the 529, again, other than my tax deduction, I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a person out there that says, oh, you got to save everything you can, and 529s, they're the bomb, and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I just, I'm more, give me my $5,000 deduction. I know I'm going to use it sometime in the future, but, you know, I don't know what the future holds for college education and the fees for college. But like Mike says, if you think your kids are going to go or your grandkids are going to go to private schools, maybe it makes a difference. And that could make it, like Mike says, it costs $20,000 a year to send your child to a private school in Maryland.
In a lot of them, at least. Most of them. The ones I looked at.
Well, I tell you this, that there's no private school in Maryland that's going to cost you anything less than $8,000 a year, because I've looked at that also. So hopefully that's helpful to you, Dave.
Absolutely. I appreciate your help, and I appreciate your advice.
Hey,
so thank you.
That was a great question. I appreciate you calling and asking it. That was a good one. I don't think we've ever answered that kind of question on the air. We're on an open show, Michael, 410-922-6680. Lines are all open, I assume,
yep,
right?
Lines are open. Your question could be our next call.
Your question could be our next call. Hey, Mike, one of the other things that I was we're going to be talking about soon in our Financial Pulse coming up is, you know, the concept of how you pay for things, okay? So I have always promoted a concept that I learned years ago, that there's four ways you can buy things. And you know, in today's world of technology, it's actually increased. You might have six or of them now. You can go to a store and you can give them cash. You can go to a store and give them a debit card. You can go to the store and give them a credit card. Or you can actually write a check in some certain situations. Or you can use Venmo nowadays, or Apple Pay, or something like that. Apple Pay is really just using a credit card anyway, though, right?
Well, so, or it could, I think you can connect it to your checking account, so it could be either.
So, yeah, okay. So, but the point is that you can use these different forms of payment. And I find that psychologically, each of us have the intuitive desire to use one of them foolishly and to use one of them extremely frugally, okay? So, for example, myself. When I was a kid, my father used to take us on vacation. He'd give us money. He'd put cash in our pocket. And he said, by the time you finish this vacation, you need to spend that money that I just gave you. And if you don't, you have to give it back to me. So basically, what I learned as a kid, that cash in your pocket means to spend it. Mm-hmm. And but on the other hand, I'm an accountant. So whenever I spend money, I like to record it in my ledger, my checkbook or my check register. And I like to see what is my balance left on my account. And I always want that account to be in the black. I want it to be positive. It makes me tremble when I see it drop into the negative. I don't like that at all. So what I do is I rarely hold a lot of cash in my pocket. It's very, somebody holds me up for cash in my pocket, they're going to be very disappointed because I don't usually keep much at all in there because I'll spend it. Whereas, you know, if you watch how I spend money, even if I use a credit card, I immediately debit my checking account ledger for the expenditures for my credit card use, even though I'm not going to pay it for maybe 30 days from now.
And I've watched this in awe and decided that this is your hobby.
This is my, nonetheless, it's an incredible way to psychologically train your mind only to spend money that you feel is logically necessary and that you can afford. And, my wife is the exact opposite. She, using credit card is a negative. Using cash is an extremely positive because her father always put money in envelopes and he used cash only to spend. And he only spent what was in cash in those envelopes. And it really helped my wife tremendously, being able to only spend money that was absolutely available and logical for her. But here's the point, getting around the concept here. So this is a great concept to teach yourself how to spend money only in a prudent way, because you're using the form of payment in your mind that is most prudent. Okay, but here's the point. Credit cards nowadays give you too much money nowadays to not use a credit card. So when you use a credit card, how much money do you get back, Mike? 1%, 2%?
4% on gas up to $2,000 a year, 6% on online subscriptions at no more than $500 a year. And I could keep going because I have mine memorized.
But what's the general? 1.5%? 1%?
It's as little as less than 1%, and overall, if you were added up over the year, as much as like 1.5%.
Right. So 1.5%. And I do the same. And we do the same in our company. We use a lot of our payments are scheduled on credit cards. And we get back, I think, between me and the company, I'd say numerous thousands of dollars in credit card rebates every year. And to ignore that concept is a negative. Now, some people like to travel. Some people like to fly around everywhere, you know? And sometimes taking that credit card and getting the points for flying around to different places could be extremely beneficial to some people, as opposed to getting the cash back that you and I like, okay?
Yeah, I was going to share a couple points on there. One thing to know is that as you're shopping different credit cards, you don't want to have too many open credit cards, which is probably more than 3 or 4 at the most. And the other thing you want to make sure you don't do, depending on what your future plans are, if you think you're going to be somebody who wants to take advantage of having a high credit score in the future, you're going to want to keep open at least one credit card that you've had the longest and try not to open too many new credit cards, because that's going to affect your credit score.
It can also be a positive for your credit score if your availability of credit also increases dramatically. So you have to weigh that.
Yep.
It is a balancing act. And some of the credit score rules are absolutely ridiculous. So when I came down here to Florida and I set my house up, I ran my credit card bill up for a while, and they dropped my credit score down ridiculous. I mean, it was ridiculous what they dropped my credit score down. I paid it off at the end of the month, and my credit balance came down. They brought my credit score back up. I had another batch of expenses. Credit balance went up. They dropped my credit score down ridiculous. And
the last company car we bought, we ran it on my credit instead of yours, and it Chuck cost me 30 points on my credit score for just getting the inquiry.
Yeah, their methods, I think, can really be intuitively updated. So anyway, using a credit card and learning how to use a credit card prudently within the psychological framework of what you do and what's best for you is the overall best way to do it. And learning what credit card, whether it's points or airline or cash back or whatever, that's going to be the most magical way you can get your finances and this expenditure of money on a daily basis best for you. So anyway, Mike, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. No one's on the line. It's just me and Mike, and so we'd love to talk to you.
Unless you want to keep hearing about credit cards, give us a call and ask us something different.
410-922-6680. And take it away now, Chris Klaproth. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410
833-723-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283 or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Listening to a little Steely Dan there and enjoying every minute of it. And so we're on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you would like to call in. But we do have a caller or two, right?
We do. We've got one caller. So please, by all means, get right in line behind our friend Ron in Perry Hall. Ron, how can we help you?
Yeah, hi, guys. Quick question. Is that still in effect if you were to move an IRA, a regular IRA, from one brokerage house to another? You have 2 months to decide where you're going to move it to?
You sort of, and not really, okay?
I know.
Okay, so here's what you're asking. There's
right.
two types of moving an IRA to a different custodian, okay?
Right.
One's called... And keep in mind, what I'm talking about is IRA to IRA. This mm-hmm. is very different when you go from 401k to IRA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just talking about IRA to IRA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's two ways to do it, Ron. And one is trustee to trustee transfer. That's the way you always want to do it, unless there's no way to do it that way. But 99% of the time, you want to do a trustee-to-trustee transfer. What does that mean? So let's say I have money with Fidelity, and I'm sick and tired of Fidelity, and I want to move to Schwab, okay? I sign a transfer form with Schwab and say, go to Fidelity, here's my statement, go to Fidelity and tell them to move all the assets at Fidelity over to you at Schwab. That's called a trustee-to-trustee transfer. It's merely done on a piece of paper signed that says, tell Fidelity to send all those assets that they're holding over to Schwab, and Fidelity will do it. It's standard in the industry, legal liability if they don't do it. If you sign off that you want to do a trustee-to-trustee transfer, it's done. There's no tax reporting. There's no nothing. It just immediately goes from Fidelity to Schwab, and you do with it at Schwab when it gets there. Totally your choice, okay?
So yeah, I did that several years ago, but this one here, because we had so many variables involved, we had a wedding coming up and things, so I didn't know how much of it I would need, so I decided to take
distribution
directly to me from my 401k, and then I was going to move it into whatever we didn't use into
IRA.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what you did, okay? So the other way of doing it is what's called a rollover.
Mm-hmm.
A rollover always, well, I shouldn't say always, for the most part, the rules are 60 days. So if I get a distribution from my 401k on December 1st, and I'm going to use it for a wedding or whatever the case may be, and then all of a sudden, I get to January 26th, and I think, oh my gosh, I'm almost out of time. I got my 60 days up. I just have to show that I dispersed the money back to them before the 60 days was up, okay? Now, it gets a little more complicated now, okay? So there are unique rules, and there's now what's called self-certification rules of the 60-day rollover. And if you can validate in your mind that one of these self-certification rules would allow you to take more time than 60 days to roll it over, you can do it. But then it's up to the IRS now to question you as to whether your self-certification is correct or not. So anyway, the point is it's a little more complicated than 60 days nowadays.
Yeah, well, the complication is also... is that I chose to do this the first week of December of last year. So we got the money right near the end of the year. So therefore, the paperwork.
It's the day the check is dispersed.
Okay.
Begins the 60 days.
I see. Well, of course, I got a statement saying I had taken that money out, but if in the new year I don't use it all and I take it back to them or maybe even perhaps to a new...
You can go to, like, if you came to me right now and said, hey, I took out a $100,000 disbursement on December 15th as the day it was dispersed. Mm-hmm. I need to do a 60-day rollover. You could set up an IRA, mm-hmm. deposit the money into it as long as it's in the 60 days, tell them that it's a rollover. The custodian should accept the money. And now you do your tax return. You say, oh, yep, I did take that $100,000 out, but I put $50,000 of it back within 60 days. So I owe taxes on $50,000. I don't owe taxes on $100,000. That's okay. How that's going to work.
I may be calling you up.
Well, you know, we'd be more than willing to talk to you and see what we could do to help you to make sure you do this right, because it can be very costly to you. How old are you?
Well, I'm retired. I'm 67.
Okay. Okay, so you don't have to worry about the 10% penalty, but you do have a lot of income taxes, especially if you live in the state of Maryland. You know, I mean, you could be talking easily 30% or more on however much money you took out of the plan, okay?
Yeah, and here's one more little curveball. What happened was when I was figuring out to avoid that upper tax bracket, I started my Social Security this past year, so I had a money that I didn't put into the equation. So I may have went over that.
Let me give you a little piece of condolence about the tax brackets, okay? Because
right.
you're probably one of the people that I constantly wanted to educate about tax brackets.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never realized this. About 10 years ago, I was with a client, and I was talking about, hey, you're going to go into the 24% tax bracket. Let's just use that. And the client was petrified that he's going into the 24% bracket. And I'm thinking in my mind, just, you know, casually thinking in my mind, what the heck is this problem, you know? I mean, so what? You're going into the 24% tax bracket, you know? I mean, it's not that big a deal. And all of a sudden, the light bulb went off in my head, Ron. And the light bulb was this. People think when you go into the 24% bracket, you retroactively make all of your income taxable at 24%.
Right.
But that's not how tax brackets work.
Right.
Here's how tax brackets work. If I leave at $82,000, the 12% tax bracket, then go to the 22% tax bracket, the dollars over $82,000 are starting to be taxed at 22%.
Mm-hmm.
You hear what I'm saying? So,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
So when you go into a new tax bracket, it's not that big a deal. It just means that some of your money is going to be taxed at a slightly higher tax bracket. I just want to make sure you understand that, because you'd be amazed at how many people don't realize that part of the equation. But I think you do.
Yeah, and I didn't want to interrupt you. I wanted you to get that out there, because I didn't know about that until probably 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. And I was, you know, I've been doing tax returns since 1982, so it never was, you know, sometimes when you know too much, you can't communicate it as well to people, you know?
Well, let me squeeze something in there for everybody listening. If you go to financialconsulate.com and you go to the Knowledge Center and you click on the Consulate Journal, our most recent article by Graham Ewing is just on that topic.
Oh, on tax brackets. There you go.
And I believe we have a webinar coming out about it.
So anyway, Ron, make sure that you do your 60-day rollover before that 60 days is up on the distribution. Make sure you know when that check was actually distributed to you, so you know when your 60 days started, okay?
Great. Okay, well, thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate it.
All right,
thank
buddy.
You.
Good question. Excellent question. Yeah, that's, he can go anywhere and deposit that. I've done that many times. We've opened up IRA accounts, deposited money in. We say it's a rollover. Schwab accepts it. Now it's up to the IRS and me to prove that it's accurate.
Well, and they send a 5498, don't they?
It's a 5498 is going to help. But his problem is that the 5498 is going to roll over to 2 years, Mike.
Yep.
He took the money out in 2021. The 5498 is not going to show a rollover in 2021. It's going to show it in 2022. So he could get questioned on it.
You just put everyone to sleep.
And, but, you know, it's interesting to me. So
I know.
Don't worry about it, you know? You said you like taxes, Mike.
Do.
What happened? Anyway, Mikey, we're out of time with Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Things are gonna be